Thank you, Rhonda. Yeah, good afternoon from my side as well, and welcome to our conference call about the results of the second quarter 2014. For the sake of time, I hand directly over to Dieter without further ado.
Thanks so much, Oliver, and good afternoon or good morning to everybody on the call. Before I dive into the financial of the quarter, let me start with our business highlights page and a short view in the engine room of the company, which drives the results. I think we are making good progress on product innovation on the property casualty side as well as life and health. I think in P&C, it's about really driving much more modular products for the retail segment as well as digitalizing the access to the products. Life and health, I think when you see the high growth numbers in the segment, it is coming from the fact that we have broadened the answer to the challenge in the life market. I think the traditional answer that in these times you can only do unit-linked and risk products to create capital light product was extended by our hybrid products, and in particular in Germany and U.S., they are driving a lot of successful growth. Asset management, Allianz Global Investors had great inflows, highest inflow in their short history since they are working under this brand. Investments, we continue to pop up our real asset investments by attractive investments because active investment process is in these times of low yield, really the game. Transaction, that is just an update. The UnipolSai acquisition had now its first closing, 725 agencies out of 729 actually signed a contract with us, so it is moving on as planned. On one hand, to improve our scale in Belgium and Netherlands, we merged already the management responsibility there some 18 months ago, and now we have actually also added the first cross-border of the P&C entities, which is not only enhancing the management but also helping the capital requirement under Solvency II. In branding, I think we are expanding our branded football and rugby stadiums by adding a stadium in Vienna that is now in a build phase, and the name Allianz will be then on the new stadium from 2016 on. All these activities, and that was just a short selection of the second quarter, what did it do to our numbers? We are really enjoying double-digit revenue and profit growth in the second quarter. Revenues up 10%, mainly driven by life, and I will show you in more detail later. Operating profit even 17% up. Next to P&C, actually life was the substantial outperformer of the quarter. Asset management weaker than last year, but as expected for the year. Also the corporate segment supported with outperformance that we ended up the quarter with 2.8 billion, almost 300 million above our pro rata outlook of 2.5 billion. The great progress in operating profit translates then also into a 10% net income improvement. Here, the growth is smaller than in operating profit because we substantially had less realized gains than a year ago. How did the balance sheet develop? Actually, pretty much parallel, almost hitting also the double-digit growth in equity, where the payout of 2.4 billion dividends during May actually stopped us from actually having also here more than 10% growth. But the development of shareholders' equity and our top line and risk-taking was very much parallel. You can see that the solvency figures in both measurements almost didn't move. And on our economic solvency, we are still including the sovereign credit risk, so unchanged measurement compared to Q1. When we would exclude the sovereign risk, credit risk, as some of our peers doing, we would have shown a 220% ratio instead of the 205. The dividend accrual continues to be at the 40% payout ratio, and we are not changing the accrual until we had our announcement as promised in December, and then we will see how it is changing and whether it is changing. We are not giving any firm guidance here, and I think after the Capital Markets Day that nobody actually should also expect that we would say today anything different. P&C segment. I'm explaining here the overall numbers. I will then dive into the individual country numbers a little bit later on a new page we have introduced in the presentation. Overall, 0.9% net growth on the top line. FX still a negative impact. Without FX, we would have seen 2.6% growth, of which volume effect is 3% and pricing is minus 0.4. The pricing was very positively in Germany. It continues also to be positive in France. The U.S. also sees still a pricing of about 3%, and Central and Eastern now within, starting with the negative, that is Central and Eastern Europe. AGCS has still seen weakening in particular in marine and aviation. However, with the tragic events around the Malaysian airline and then also the other two airline crashes we have seen in recent weeks, that could be the triggering point that we will see going forward positive rate developments in aviation. The biggest negative number is Italy. It's minus 7% in the second quarter compared to a year ago. But it is not yet creating actually a lot of pressure on the profit line, because when we now turn to the next page, completing it here, the Italian story. Our accident year loss ratio actually in Italy is still better than a year ago, because severity as well as frequency are down on a Q2 over Q2 comparison. So therefore, the price decreases is nothing to complain about. Is minus 2.2% negative growth in Italy good or bad? Well, we expect that the market at half year was at minus 4.5%. So we are still growing market share in Italy. When we now go to the overall profitability, and I have to admit that the combined ratio story is a little bit more complicated than in previous quarters, because we have to sort out some effects. So let's take the simple reading, combined ratio 1.4% improvement, but when you look at the cat losses, down from 5.3 to 1.6, that would mean an improvement of 3.7. When you now subtract the runoff ratio, which is 2.3% lighter than a year ago, you end up in to the decimal point with the improvement of the combined ratio. And in insurance, there's always a however. so therefore I have to continue with the however. We have a 1.1% worsening of our large losses. So the little bit higher large losses are actually masking that our underlying attritional loss ratio improved by this 110 base points, which I think is pretty much what our indication was during previous quarters, that we still have a very good run rate improvement overall. So is the runoff ratio of 3.4% disappointing? I will give you a little bit more insight into this in a moment, but let me first look at the operating results by OE and country. So the biggest positive swing is Germany, of course, which had a lot of cat losses a year ago, and the improvements which we had the opportunity to present to you in our July 2013 Capital Markets Day, I think we have all outperformed any of the set targets. France is also is a little bit down in operating profit, but actually combined ratio in the second quarter was influenced by the storm Ila, which hit half Germany, half France roughly. Italy is mainly less runoff result, or it's actually all less runoff results than previous year, and AGCS has a really good combined ratio despite that they had actually to bear all the additional large losses in the second quarter. And I will then come to the next page where we are showing a slightly different view and angle of the overall portfolio. We have split our portfolio into three groups. The one who are performed in the first 6 months, because I think combined ratio looking at single quarters only is not really making solid statements. Longer periods are offer better insight. So below 95% is the first group, between 95 and 100% the second, and then also there is still not an empty box above 100%, but I will come to this one. Let's start with the best group. That is 63% of our portfolio with an average combined ratio of 88. Big contributors are Germany, Italy, AGCS, and of course also the credit insurance, but there was not more room in the column, so I could only pick the best three. And Germany had really in the first half year a 91 combined ratio, and actually they did not benefit too much from the low cat events. The second quarter was pretty much consuming the normal cat losses. But what is really great here is the growth. We have with 6% internal growth, and over the half year 3.3% clearly outperformed expectation. And our target for the year was a 26 expense ratio, and we are with 25.6 clearly ahead of this one. Italy, I mentioned already that despite lower rates, accident year loss ratio, including motor, is still improving. And AGCS, I think, has another very good quarter or half year of good loss ratios. The second group, 30% of the portfolio with an average of 97. UK, you have just seen at the Capital Markets Day, half year, almost 10% growth. Actually, in the second quarter, we had 15.5% growth standalone. France almost made it to the below 95% combined ratio group, but also the other half of the cat loss in the second quarter stopped them to moving there, but I'm confident that they have good opportunities to move to the below 95 class. And AWP, as we also presented at the Capital Markets Day, that is, of course, the OE, which is strongest focused on growth and also delivering it. The class which I would like to have completely emptied by now, we have still three companies in the above 100 category. And as I said before, let me start with the run-off result. We are showing for the whole segment 3.4% positive run-off, and the three companies who are listed here are actually consuming 1 percentage point out of it. That means without reserve increases in Russia, US, and Brazil, we would have shown a 4.4% run-off result for the year, for the quarter, sorry. And these two effects, the more large losses and the negative run-off of these three countries are certainly a back down on an excellent combined ratio, so you can also say potential upside for the future. So what is wrong with the three places? Well, Fireman's Fund is a true disappointment because the target of making a little underwriting profit this year is completely out of reach. We have three effects. There was already the bad start in the first quarter with weather-related losses. The weather-related losses continued in the second quarter. We were hit by two large settlements of individual large claims really from the past, some 10, 15 years old. And certainly, we have revised our accident year loss ratio assumption for the commercial business. And this together with, the negative reserve runoff were the two large claims I mentioned already. Russia is the change in the right to litigate a motor claim. That was some almost 2 years ago, the law changed in Russia, and in particular the areas far outside Moscow and St. Petersburg are making heavy use of this option to sue the insurance company after a little car accident. And this has made the market, I think, for all motor players very unattractive, and I feel that the foreign insurers in Russia are getting the more difficult part in this game, and therefore you see a withdrawal of foreign retail insurers in Russia to some extent, and we will also reduce our branch network substantially, and we have already started to reduce the branch network, and will focus on the large cities only. Brazil continues what I explained already in Q1. The IT platform issues have not been fully resolved and have been added by a lack of pricing in the health segment, where the inflation has outgrown our pricing assumptions, so that we have now to deal with two issues: get the IT platform fully aligned with what a Brazilian broker wants to see in processes, and secondly, get the repricing of the group health portfolio done. But we have worked out a very detailed action plan already, and I think we are very positive that we can solve this problem ourselves without any help. P&C operating investment results is holding up very well. I think also the reinvestment rate is even slightly higher than last year. That are effects from one hand the US, but also some emerging markets, and also a stronger shift to corporate bonds. And we have started again some months ago to buy Spanish government bonds, which we had banned for quite some time. Now, the life segment. Strong growth as indicated, Germany very successful with our new hybrid products, but also with some standard single premium products and group benefit schemes, leading to 20% or 21% growth in revenues and 40% in new business premium. And Germany, our leading life company, is then also representing the average of the segment, which shows that everybody else continues to grow strongly. In Germany, we are certainly grabbing market share. Please remember that on a business in force basis, our market share is probably 17 or now by now maybe 18% of the market, where in new business, I would not be surprised that we would go close to 30% in market share this year. Italy, continued success of, on one hand, the unit linked, although the growth after the strong sales volume last year could not be repeated, but we kept the high volume unchanged. And then we had non-unit linked business growth, mainly sold through Unicredito, our partner in Italy. The biggest sales success is our fixed index annuity business. We have actually, when you look at the internal growth figure, that means in US dollar terms, we doubled our revenues in the US and our new business volume grew 86%. So both are very strong numbers, and that is one fixed index annuity product which is exclusively using one Barclays index, which is a dynamic combination between S&P 500 and Barclays aggregate, and that sells very well and is also a product which is not only good for the customer but also giving us a 3.8% profit margin, which I will show you in a minute. Besides the big balance sheet, we should also not forget that actually Asia-Pacific and Switzerland are also on a good growth in new business. Also our German health business is back on track in growth, and also Central and Eastern Europe. Before we go to the new business margin and volume, let's first talk about the operating profit. 984 million euros quarterly operating profit, almost €1 billion, actually has never been reached before. So how did we do this in this difficult market? The big jump is in the investment margin at the plus of 313 million. And to be very fair, I think in this result is about 120 million euros of positive one-offs. And what I would actually do is when you compare second quarter 14 to second quarter 13, so it's a good 300 million improvement. I'm memorizing these numbers very simple. The whole difference I cut into three pieces. The first third were the negative one-offs from last year, mainly losses, foreign currency losses on foreign currency investments. The second third is really underlying profit improvement, and the last third are the positive one-offs of the quarter. So what are the positive one-offs of the quarter? So around 120 million, half and half between Germany and US. Germany benefited strongly from its interest rate derivatives, which are of course were really increasing substantially with the Bund going down in the second quarter substantially. Then the other point is we had some additional harvesting in Germany, but not on equities. We sold some old real estate buildings and as part of our normal renewal of our real estate portfolio. And in the U.S., there is mainly positive hedge results, which are the driver for the one-offs. You can also see here in this information that actually our risk margin went down by 78 million. That is two halves of it. One is the change in the German law, which we discussed also at the Capital Market Day, which did cost us, including the catch-up for the first quarter, some 40 million. That means for the whole year, you have roughly to calculate that our technical margin compared to previous years is 90 million euros lower. This has been compensated by more investment margin as we are changing the policyholder-shareholder split on the investment margin in Germany, and that is also a sustainable change. So in total, our German customers are getting the same amount as before. Only the source of profit is shifting slightly between mortality and investment margin. So now our value of new business. The value of new business is 380 million euros. It's a substantial increase over previous year, so driven, of course, by 40% higher volume, but also by nice improvement in the new business margin, which shows that our new product generation, and it is not only unit-linked and risk business, are really addressing customer needs and are creating really sellable products. We had in the quarter, which I did not mention before, around 4.2 billion-4.3 billion euros of net inflows, which shows that is substantial investments from the customers going to our balance sheet. And also, this substantial volume of new business, of course, did cost something. I should have mentioned it. So the operating profit of the new business of the quarter was a negative of a bit more than 60 million euros. That means probably without the substantial increase in new business volume, we would have ended up with 1 billion instead of the 984 million. So the investment margin, I think I have almost already explained that the combination of the negative and positive one-offs and base improvements that our new business margin moved up from 17 basis points to 25. So we have given so far as a guidance that the normal level is 75 for the year. I probably would increase it now closer in the direction of 80 billion, 80 basis points. What is also important to notice is actually the growth in our aggregate policy reserves. There is, on one hand, the accrued interest rates, which is growing it, but on the other hand, also the substantial net inflows, so that actually the basis on which we earn our investment margin is around 5% higher than in previous year, and 5% more base times a slightly higher investment margin results then also into a positive shift of our overall outlook for the life segment. Now let's come to the asset management category. And I think it is pretty much delivering what we believed in the beginning of the year and what we set with our outlook for 2040. We see a good performance based on the AUM development. Sure, it's driven by positive market developments. Outflows at PIMCO continue, 20 billion in the second quarter, certainly still too much. However, less than in the first quarter, and Allianz Global Investors actually is showing really good positive net inflows. Overall, our assets under management compared to the beginning of the year are up 40 billion euros on the third party volume and substantially more on including our group assets. And actually our group assets are benefiting here really from a good performance of our asset managers, and we are very happy with the returns because that is certainly also a driver that we can speak more positively about the investment margin in our life segment. The revenues in asset management based on the outflows of the last four quarters and all the developments we have already discussed, they are 9.4% down in euro terms. Still, the weaker dollar consumed more, because on a dollar basis, the reduction would only be 5.8%. So looking at the euro-dollar exchange rate, actually the pressure from the dollar should go a little bit away, and I would expect a more positive contribution from the exchange rate going forward. That would also take away the negative, which is so pronounced with the double movement of the underlying and the dollar, so that we have then only to deal with the underlying. And with the underlying, I think we are dealing well. PIMCO's performance has recovered, measured as outperformance on the funds. The 12-month performance is at 83%, the 3-year performance 89%, so that means short and long-term measurements show really strong numbers, and also the recovery here should help us to turn around the outflow or inflow picture going forward. When we look at the operating profit, as I said before, operating profit is at target. We are quite happy with the 90 million operating profit of Allianz Global Investors, in particular as it includes a 23 million euro one-off on non-income taxes. That means without the negative one-off, we would have clearly beaten the 100 million mark for a quarter. And that is a very strong performance for an asset manager of this size. So PIMCO continues to deliver 600 million, and actually when you look at the operating profit, the 600 million is higher than what we have seen in the first quarter delivered by PIMCO. So overall, I think operating profit is as expected, but it is not repeating the double-digit growth, what we all got so nicely used to. Now, finishing the presentation with a short look at the corporate segment, there are actually three or four changes which influence the 50 million additional profit, or less losses, to be more precise. We have less admin costs, actually 24 million, at the holding and treasury segment. We make 23 million more investment income based on the cash we collected from all the countries. I presented you the cash flows and the excess capital repatriation program a few weeks ago at the Capital Market Day. A negative was that actually our centralized IT unit has charged out 17 million less to all the countries, but I think that is just a delay between months. The banking segment slightly improved. That is more the absence of expenses due to the closure of Allianz Bank. So we have closed this negative operating profit contribution. And I think all the banks are delivering now a small positive profit, and it is, I think, now back to normal. So how are we then now translating the 17% plus in operating profit to the net income number? Our non-operating items in total are -39 million, so close to the zero line. The realized gains are about half of what they were a year ago, so that means the result this year has less volatile positive one-off than a year ago. The 243 million this year is actually, I think it's a good 30 million from equity realization, 33 million, and the rest is fixed income area that is mainly in the P&C segment playing the yield curve, where the 33 million in equities is probably slightly below what you would expect long term from the equity portfolio we keep in our property casualty segment. All the other numbers are pretty much normal, very low write-downs, and the income tax is still at our expected range around the 32%-33%, so nothing very special. With this one, let me just summarize. I think you see a great growth in revenues. Operating profits clearly beating our own outlook, and shareholders' net income, hence also substantially up, and that all was achieved with a strong capital and balance sheet growth with solvency ratios at the expected and reliable high level. Our outlook overall, the 10 billion ±500 million, we still think it is adequate to keep it unchanged. However, we believe that we can reach the upper end of the range, which should not surprise you. With this one, I would stop here and hand over to Oliver.
Okay, now we're happy to take your questions.
Thank you. We'll take the first question from Paul De'Ath of RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi there. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. A couple of questions, please. Firstly, on the P&C business, you've obviously gone into quite a lot of detail on the areas where you've strengthened reserves. I just wanted to check on that. How large are the reserve strengthening in each of those three areas? The second sort of part of that question, I guess, is on Russia. You said that you're kind of scaling back the operations there. What's your view on, you know, on that sort of, I guess, longer term? Would you ever think of just pulling out entirely like some of your peers have? That's the first question. Second question is on the life side. Just a quick question on the duration of your liabilities. The duration seems to have gone up a reasonable amount in the quarter, sort of over Q1. I'm just wondering if there's any sort of reasoning behind that, or if there's any more detail you can give on that. That'd be great. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Paul. I think the life duration, that is, I think, a straight question and answer. The duration, of course, is dependent on the interest rate level. That means when interest rates are where they are, and we have mainly our long duration comes from Europe, so therefore it has to be lengthened with a lower swap curve. On P&C, well, I think when you look at the combined ratios of the three entities, and I said that in total, 1%, that means 100 million euros is spread over the three entities. I think you can almost do the math yourself. I think that we are usually not giving run-off results on this detail level. It was only more for confirming that the positive run-off of all the large and successful OEs is running at a very good level, and that we had last year a total absence of negative run-offs, But this year we are showing it, and I believe we should be fully transparent. When we have soft spots in our portfolio, then we should talk about the soft spots. Russia, I think a complete pull out is not in our strategic direction. I think it is really the issue is here that in the countryside, the interaction between courts, lawyers, and the customers are for us too intransparent. Therefore, we prefer to stick to the areas where we better understand what is going to happen. And also, of course, Russia is under the caveat that we have now also evaluate whether the European and U.S. sanction will to some extent limit the corporate business. That is, as we speak, probably unpredictable. But long term, I think the situation is probably improving again. And then also Russia is an important market for us, for the large customers and our international customers, which are all doing business in Russia.
Okay, excellent. Thanks.
We'll take the next question from John Hocking of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I've got three questions, please. I wonder if you could give a little bit of colour on PIMCO. You seem to be very confident that the performance is improving. I wonder if you could give some colour in terms of how you're seeing flows with retail versus institutional and what the commentary you're receiving from institutional intermediaries is, whether they're worried about performance governance of PIMCO. That's the first question. Second question, you mentioned large losses, and you specifically talked about Farmers Fund, but I wonder, are there any other trends in large losses, either by country or line of business? Second question. And then thirdly, on Solvency II, you mentioned, again, in your economic capital numbers that you've included sovereign asset charges. What are your discussions with BaFin? Do you think this is going to be something which is going to be a sort of fundamental part of Solvency II, or do you think there's a chance you'll be able to reverse this from your final Solvency II calculations? Thank you.
Okay, John, just a second. You were so fast with speaking, still writing down your question that I'm not forgetting any. PIMCO, actually the biggest outflow number comes from retail, and that is very visible when you look at our mix. We had a year ago 35% of the business, or the money was retail money, and now we are down to 33%. So that two percentage points shift shows that retail is still most of the outflows. Of course, there is also some institutional outflows, but I think institutional is less driven by PIMCO. It's much more when institutional investors decide that they do something completely different with their money. And there are two reasons. A corporation could use the money for operating expansion. And if they do a total shift in asset classes, if somebody wants Japanese real estate, certainly we cannot offer this from our two asset managers. So therefore, there is also sometimes that investors change completely their investment strategy. But overall, I think that the discussions with institutional investors are still quite positive. And actually, Allianz is the largest institutional investor in PIMCO with close to 300 billion euros. And I can tell you our investment margin in the life business would not look stable and good when they would do a bad job. And we are also, PIMCO is running fiduciary obligations towards their customers, and we do the same, and our life managers could not stay with the PIMCO funds when it would be under pressure in the performance, and we have to play it here very much arm's length, and I can tell you we are quite happy with the development.
So you're comfortable that it's not just that the institutional clients are reacting more slowly to the historic performance issues in the last few quarters?
Well, that I cannot exclude it because I'm not speaking to every institutional investor. So, but I think in the end, it is about the true performance of an asset manager, and the institutional investors are usually much more rational when doing their investment decision. I think a retail customer is not the only one influencing the decision. There is also always an advisor in between, and usually switching funds from one firm to another is for the advisor usually a good job.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I forgot the large losses. Sorry, John. The large losses is that is pretty easy. I don't think that there is any trend. We had at HECS two big losses. One was both are related to the oil industry. One in Far East Russia and one in another place. So that are the two big individual losses, and I would take this as business as usual. And on Solvency II, your question on the sovereign bonds, I assume that there is more a trend in the EU that sovereign risk would be included. So I think the whole overall judgment goes more in trend to include it and not to exclude.
Okay, it's very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from Farooq Hanif of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my questions. First one, just on what you mean by the sovereign charge, is this the same as the 10 basis point deduction from swap, or is it a specific charge for spread risk in government bonds? Just want to understand exactly how it's working. That's question one. Secondly, in light of your still strong economic capital position, you know, can you talk about some of the asset allocation shifts you would be making, to counteract the low yield environment? And related to that, can we therefore expect that actually realized gains and harvesting as part of the operational results in life could be something that we continue to see for a while in your numbers? Thank you.
Farooq, yes, I think that a stable harvesting is certainly what we want to achieve, and I can maybe give it in more detail on the P&C segment, because there the calculation is easier as we don't need to split it with the policyholder. We have roughly 6 billion euros at the moment in equities in P&C, and of course I'm not talking about it whether we would increase it or decrease it, because that would potentially influence the market. So the 6 billion should allow us to create 180 to 200 million a year on realized gains only in this segment. And when you see that we had included this quarter only 33 million, so that is certainly below a long-term average line. So that part I would see continue. And I think on the bond portfolios, as long as the steepness of the interest rate curve is not changing, I see also a continuing of our realized gains on the debt portfolio. Our other investments that will take more long term, because what we are expending currently in real estate, we are not planning to turn this buildings around in the short term. That are more longer term developments, and the infrastructure investments and our investments in wind parks, that is mainly held to maturity of illiquid assets that is just supporting our base investment income, which I think is also holding up nicely.
Can I just interject very quickly on that? I mean, are you assuming that this is going to use up economic capital, or is it economic capital neutral, everything that you're doing?
We have allocated more economic capital over the last quarters. On the other hand, also our overall risk management has actually also freed up economic capital. For example, when you're lengthening your asset duration and you reduce your gap, then you free up economic capital, and this freed up capital we have then reinvested in more risk taking. So therefore, lengthening of the portfolio is on one hand consuming risk capital, on the other hand freeing up. So therefore, it's probably allowing us to create more spread without using up capital. And your sovereign risk charge, no, I think on sovereign bonds, what we have included in our calculation is going full distance. That means spread, default, migration, risk, all included, like a corporate bond.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now move to Andrew Ritchie, Autonomous.
Oh, hi there. Just one question following up on the last question. I'm slightly confused on the new and the reinvestment strategy in P&C. It sounds like you're encouraging us to think that you are going to continue with high levels of realized gains on bonds. Well, surely that will accelerate the running yield decline. I'm not sure how that generates economic value. So what exactly are you doing on the reinvestment side in P&C, and why? When you said you're playing the yield curve, are you seeking to buy longer duration and sell short? Or just I'm confused. Clarify, that would be helpful. Secondly, in your introductory remarks, you used the phrase "not yet" in reference to Italian P&C profitability, as in it had not yet deteriorated. Are you expecting that this year? Do you have any view on whether frequency and severity starts to normalize a bit, or whether we'll start to see more of an impact of lower rates coming through, lower pricing coming through? And then final question, in the US, you talked about you had changed accident year loss picks as well as prior year reserve issues. I mean, that often is an indicator that you might start to look at reserves in general again. So is there going to be a more sort of reserve review of Fireman's Fund in the second half? Thanks.
Okay, starting with P&C, I hope it was not too confusing, but actually when you have a bond which still has a 3% coupon, and that was a 10-year bond, and it is now approaching the last 2-3 years, The total return you make in the last 2 years of a bond is, well, it's 0.3%, 0.4% or something like this, because of
the pull to par.
But still you are not earning anything anymore in the last 2 years. Therefore, it would be completely wrong to wait the last 2 years of a maturing bond. You better turn it around and reinvest it in a longer-term bond. That is pretty much because you are economically keeping the money for 40, 50 base points in the last 2 years.
That's okay.
So why would you do this? Because you can. There is, when you go again 7-8 years, you are still getting more than 40, 50 base points. Sure, that is a total value and market value consideration. It is not the consideration only of running yield, but I think you should also see that in total we can also with the strategy afford to create the realized gains because our running yield in P&C stayed pretty much up.
What are you reinvesting longer duration though than you have?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think you have a bond which matures in 2016 and you sell it now because the last 2 years you are earning, you have a decline in market value versus the coupon. So the net out of the two is 40 base points. And instead of cashing in the 40 base points the last 2 years, you are now reinvested still at 2.5 or 3 percent, and that is the additional value you are creating by this activity.
Okay, I might reverse.
Are you doing something different with your own portfolio?
I mean, you're reinvesting at lower rates, though.
Yes, but the total value you get out of both is still, if you add both sides of the equation, you get more than keeping it.
Okay, I'll revert offline on this one.
Yeah, yeah, I think you need investment advice.
Fair enough.
So,
I mean, I guess that's interesting. What are you reinvesting in the P&C? I mean, obviously, you're not investing in German bonds at this point. Well, at least that's
no, German bonds are actually at the moment blacklisted, not because we are not a trust country, but with 1% return for 10 years, we are absolutely not happy with the 1%. We are certainly more reinvesting into corporates than before. We are also, we have opened up again a little bit our investment into Spanish government bonds, so which also helps our average, and that is, I think, the main change on the P&C side. Mm-hmm. And we have over the last 2 years increased slowly, but also supported by market as equity allocation.
Okay.
So Italy, the word not yet, and maybe I need English training, instead was only referring to the fact when people are seeing, renewal rates are 7% down, that actually our accident year loss ratio is still improving, and I'm not linking the severity and frequency improvement to the Italian economy. I think it is still our continued selection in the agent channel. So certainly...
So it's a structural, not a cyclical...
Yeah, I think we have to be very careful. Certainly the Unipol portfolio will not come in at the same average combined ratio as our current Italian portfolio, and that is if you look at the pricing of the transaction, then Unipol would have done a very bad deal when they would sell a 80% combined ratio business at such a price. So therefore, there will be in mix certainly a higher combined ratio in Italy at year end, but we will disclose completely what is old portfolio, what is new portfolio, and what are the mix effects. And in the U.S., U.S. reserves have to be reviewed very carefully every year, but when we would have today any indication for increased reserve needs, then we would have booked it. If it is different in a few months, then we let you know.
So, but you've increased, to be clear, the current accident year loss picks, is that right? You said, I think so.
We increased, I think the underwriting improvements which were planned were not achieved in this way, and therefore we took a more conservative stand.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from Michael Huttner of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Fantastic. I hope you can hear me on my mobile. Two questions, please. On the Russia and Brazil and US, you said 100 million roughly is the reserve amount, and I worked out, I'm really good at maths here, that the total underwriting loss for those three countries was around 200 million, I think the right figure is about 195. So it implies there's also 95 million in terms of still above 100% combined ratio for those three countries. Can you talk Can you talk that's a little bit more? Because reserve additions plus actual claims. I know you mentioned to Andy Ritchie that yeah, the US is lost six for them. It just seems weird. Normally it's either one or the other. Here we see both, and I'm just wondering a little bit what is happening and what we could expect for the next quarter here. On the other thing, you mentioned on the dividend, the December, I thought the decision would depend on the Solvency II, and that could be November, but I heard you say, and I may be wrong, December, and I just wondered if you could just comment on that. Thank you.
You are giving me all a hard time today, so I thought that were such great results. Starting with the P&C, yes, it is true, the run rate of the three is above 100 also on an accident year combined ratio, and in the U.S., we had the weather-related impact and then the change in loss picks for the accident year. So both are resulting in a combined ratio above 100. If you look at the half year or the second quarter combined ratio for Russia, it is 160, if I'm not mistaken, 165 precisely. That is also, it is absolutely not making money. And in Russia, the retail third-party liability premiums for motor are defined by the government, so you cannot change your pricing. If you could change your pricing, the Russian market would be easy. I should have mentioned this, that this is a fixed tariff. So therefore, in the end, the only thing what you can do is close the shop and don't write new business until the pricing and the losses are in balance. So I think that is the more important point. And then the dividend, we said always, yes, somewhere at year end, we will tell you what will be the new number for the year. I think we have all understood your expectations. You have all seen that we have a range of options, and I think we come together at year end. The Solvency II numbers are probably at some point stabilizing. There is, besides Solvency II, we are also a systemic important company. There are also some capital requirements coming from this calculation. So we have to take a decision here at some point and see how we can work through it.
Brilliant. That's very helpful. And sorry, I wasn't trying to give you a hard time. They're the only bits I could think to ask for. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move to Thomas Fiedel of Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Good afternoon. Number of questions here. On the P&C side, the rate changes have come down again this quarter. I think we are now at a level where this is below expected inflation. Is it fair to assume that, you know, the P&C segment hence has reached a certain peak in terms of performance here? Secondly, on the life side, you know, you mentioned these enormous growth rates. I wonder, as a CFO, don't you get nervous when you see such enormous growth rates in a mature market? And what makes you comfortable that, you know, Allianz is not suffering what is called the winner's curse here? And thirdly, on Yapı Kredi, there is a quite substantial drop in volume on the non-life side. I wonder, would you buy Yapı Kredi at the same money that you bought it for, and hence, you know, should you expect some goodwill impairment? I think it's 220 million on Yapı Kredi.
I'm happy to start with Yapı Kredi. I think we are far away from a good goodwill impairment. Certainly, the Turkish P&C market was always very sensitive to underwriting profits, and you remember that over the long run, Allianz and Yapı Kredi were always the winner in this underwriting game. And when the market is in some areas too soft, then we have just to be careful with writing new business, and I think the profitability is more important. But what has really made up for it is the substantially higher investment income, which is, I think we calculated the transaction with a 6% yield, and Turkey is, I think, in the double-digit area for even for short-term money. On the life side, yes, certainly in the German market, it is the flight to quality. I think in Germany, all our products are priced very sensible. I think we are only promising what we can really deliver over the long run. I can tell you that the regulators, and as part of the systemic process, they are all over us with long-term scenarios and calculations. So that means our knowledge of scenarios and long-term risk is substantially higher than it was in the past. So we are also learning with these processes, but the learning is very positive in the sense that we are maybe even more confident on our life business than we were before. And look at our reinvestment yield, which is very stable year over year. So, and the risk we are taking, I think we are still comfortable from a risk management point of view. The other big growth driver is actually U.S. There we are selling in principle one product, that is one fixed index annuity special product. I think we have done all our testing, we have looked at it, nobody got very nervous over this product, so as long as we can sell it at this large volumes, and actually the scale effect is very positive. I did not mention this, that the U.S. improvement in new business margin is driven on one hand by the pricing and the market impact, on the other hand, but also by the volume impact. We are clearly now, instead of having an expense overrun, we have an expense underrun, which of course helps the new business margin. The P&C rate changes, yes, they have peaked on average in the portfolio, where Italy is probably the biggest contributor at the moment. I think that will also calm down at some point in Italy, and I think that when I look at the aviation market, that would be for me the area where probably the first positive rate changes will take place this year. Aviation is an interesting line of business. We are, I think, overall probably the largest, or at least one of the market leaders. The rates went down since they peaked after World Trade Center event. So we have seen a slight decline in aviation rates for more than 10 years by now. And I think 2014 is certainly a triggering event with not only with the tragic events around Malaysian Airline, also with the other crashes we have seen in the last months, that aviation rates are probably going up. So it is in mixture. I think we can drive our profitability, and I think the biggest improvement area is for me actually the three highlighted countries, where you are rightfully asking a lot of questions around, but actually what was more the idea is that we are actively managing our overall portfolio, and we are not shying away from the soft spots, and share with you what we are going to do.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you. We will now move to William Hawkins of KBW. Please go ahead.
Hello, Dieter. Not having a go at you, but coming back to Fireman's Fund, can you just clarify a bit more what you mean in the slide by accelerated improvement plans? I mean, you've given us some information, but you know, my feeling at the end of the first quarter was that you were very clear that there was a cost overrun problem in the US, and that was what was being addressed. You haven't even mentioned cost this time when you've been talking about the US, and so it seems like much deeper problems have emerged. So, I mean, in that context, can you just tell us what you mean by accelerated improvement plan? And then secondly, again, the aviation losses in the third quarter, is there any figure or sort of range that you could give us for what those might mean for Allianz? Thank you.
Yes, William, happy to start with the aviation losses third quarter. This tragic situation in eastern Ukraine where the plane was probably shut down. We are only covering Hull when it was a normal accident, when it was an act of war. We are not a member of the consortium who are leading the war coverage. So then we would only participate in the liability case, and you can put a range about it, but it is an average large loss. Nothing very spectacular. So say in euros, I don't know, maybe between 20 and 30 million. And actually the other aviation losses, we have a very, very tiny participation in it that would not even make it to a mid-sized loss.
Great, thank you.
So Fireman's Fund, well, accelerated improvement and management action means to me to look at all levers and do whatever you can do. Therefore, expenses are not excluded.
But just to be clear again, I mean, you've answered this question, or you've had this question a couple of times, but this is now no longer an issue of just expenses. We are back in underwriting and reserving problems as well.
The reserving, maybe I have not explained this well. The reserve increases were linked to two large losses. So it's not that an actuary looked at it. No, the lawyers settled two large losses, and the lawyers did not look at the actuarial papers before, and therefore we are now paying more than what we had in the case reserves.
Okay, so I think you've, again, in comment to another question, you're not shifting to a view where there may be a systemic problem with the reserves in Fireman's Fund.
No. I think we had a review in the second quarter of asbestosis and environmental, so that has been reviewed and also revised. That is P&L neutral because we are keeping a high asbestosis reserve at the center, and that is an expected development in the U.S., and that part is therefore neutral for Fireman's Fund.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move to Nick Holmes of Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Thank you very much. Two questions. First is with U.S. Life. Wondered, can you tell us more about the risks with the fixed index annuity product? In particular, how worried are you that you're putting on a lot of interest rate risk? Because I think that is the principal risk with the product. And indeed, I mean, are you selling the product because basically you expect rates to rise? And the second question is looking at P&C and the expense ratio. There's been a bit of improvement in Q2, and I just wondered if you could remind us how much further improvement you think is possible. Thank you.
The last question was improvement on what?
The P&C expense ratio, there was a bit of improvement in Q2. I just wondered if you could give us a bit more background about some scope for improvement in P&C expenses as a general question.
Well, I think the 30 base points we probably carry through the rest of the year that were not one-offs. I did not mention that our net earned premium actually grew 3% in the second quarter versus 1% on the gross top line. And that is the reinsurance program, which we explained, where we are changing our reinsurance purchases so that, that we have a slightly better growth on the earned premium versus the overall premium. It's absolutely correct. Fixed index annuity products are not taking interest rate risk. Fixed index annuity products are not, the deferred annuity component is absolutely cash flow matched. Then there is this equity option or the option linked to the underlying fund that we are dynamically hedging. And actually, there are, when you look at the whole space of fixed index annuity players in the U.S., that are the five, six companies. There is, we had last year the private equity guys who entered over two carriers the market, and there are also the players which are competing with us for a long time. I think we are the market leader. We had 16% market share over the last 5 years on average, I would say. We are probably with the second quarter number substantially higher in market share. That is my guess. And there are two options in the market. Some players are buying with each tranche of new business a fixed hedge in the market and not touching the hedge at all over time. We are a bit more sophisticated in our hedging program, that we run a dynamic hedge and actually also using a little bit the offsetting correlation between our VA book and the fixed index annuity book, which allows us to be a little bit more efficient on the hedging. So therefore, we are not taking any interest rate risk with this business. Only when the interest rates are higher, the pricing of the product on the day of sale is easier. When you have zero interest rate, then it is hard to split the 0% between customer and shareholder. So that makes the pricing, of course, more difficult. And additionally, when hedging would become more expensive due to higher volatility or other market factors, we have actually a variable expense charge in the product. That means on a 3-month basis, we could adjust our expense charge going forward to catch up with potential other costs in the hedging program. So I think that is a straightforward product, and as I explained, our fixed index annuity product, the equity option we have to hedge is a mix of S&P 500 and Barclays aggregate. There is also almost no base risk in hedging these two indices, because that are the most common indices you can think of. So therefore, I'm pretty comfortable with the current product generation.
Thank you for that. That's very interesting. Perhaps I can slightly rephrase the question, which is, with that fixed index annuity book, what would your view of the impact of rising or falling rates, interest rates in America be? I mean, would it be, you know, if rates do rise, would you see that as positive? Presumably, your margins could expand. Whereas if rates were to fall, would you think that you are completely hedged forever on this book?
Hedged in the sense of the business in force, yes. If we talk about future new sales volume, that has, of course, a sensitivity towards the interest rate market. Although I think that this current index, which goes between S&P 500 and the Barclays aggregate, I think that has a lot of elasticity, even if U.S. rates would continue to fall. If interest rates going up, I think then the pricing of the new business volume is anyway easier, and the attractiveness for the customers comes very well. And worst case, our new business margin goes slightly backwards from the 3.8%, and it is still then a very profitable book, which generates a profitability which enhances our overall segment profitability. So the U.S. Has underlying year over year, I think the new business volume of the last 12 months has probably created some 50 million is clearly 50 million plus in operating profit. And what you have to consider on a fixed index annuity policy, the customer pays in the cash and we are investing the cash in a matched asset portfolio. And the hedging is only done for paying out this embedded equity option, which gives a little upside for the customer, but it is not changing the risk profile for us as the shareholder.
Understood. And sorry, just one final question, which is, given the volumes you're writing, do you have a sort of limit on the volume that you see going forward? Because, I mean, if you continue to grow at this pace, you'll turn into a U.S. life company.
Well, look, Prudential also gets all the volume from the U.S. and is still seen as an Asian life company, so I'm pretty happy to inherit the PE of Pru.
No, that's a very good answer, but is there a sort of limit that you've got, or are you happy to just carry on growing at this sort of level?
I think we carry on growing with this product. We have still a limit on our VA volume, and we are not lifting our limit on the VA volume.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Moving on to Atanasio Bantarotas of Kepler.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon to everybody. Three quick questions, I hope. First one, on the reinvestment yield in PNC, you mentioned that it was 2.5 in the first half. However, I guess now is considerably lower, given that the narrowing spread, also, for example, the Spanish govies yield for 3-4 years maturity is below 1%. Second question, so if you can provide what could be now the reinvestment yield in PNC. Second question, again, on the sovereign charge in Solvency II. According to you, is there any chance that only the cross-border investment will be penalized in terms of capital, or you consider that every bond investment also if a company invests in its domestic government bond market would be penalized? Final question on your acquisition on an Unipol portfolio. I know that it's a work in progress, but what is your target in terms of combined ratio, at least your target range of combined ratio for the portfolio acquired? Thanks.
I think we will not disclose the target combined ratio for the Unipol acquisition. I think that would be, certainly we have a business plan, but actually we are not disclosing business plans to this detail level. Sorry, Atanasio, you have to understand this. The reinvestment yields today compared to the Q2 numbers, I think you probably have to expect that it is 10-20 base points lower. The sovereign risk topic, that is a widely discussed topic among all the European insurance groups as well as the regulator among each other, and there are various scenarios floating around. There is the question, should it be excluded completely? Should there be a mixed solution where only cross-border sovereign bonds are being treated like corporate bonds, but the home market bias would allow to consider it still at risk-free, or the full treatment as corporate bonds? all variations are in the room, and the only statement I have made is there is a higher likelihood that there will be some form of risk charge for the corporate bonds, for the sovereign bonds, whether it will go to the 100% of the corporate bond or some middle ground, that could be, but I think that is at the moment changing in so rapid time that it's almost not worthwhile to speculate.
Okay, and your model is built according to make a capital charge also on the domestic bonds or only on the cross-border investments?
In our own calculation, full distance.
Okay, many thanks.
You should know our risk manager.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Andy Broadfield of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Well, hi there. A couple of questions, please. I will come very briefly back to that Solvency II question. You mentioned, I think, when you first introduced it into the model at the beginning of the year, a comment which referred to the fact that financial services should all be treated the same, and that the introduction of this into the banks would be quite a considerable charge for them, and that would create some considerable level of disorder, and that therefore that was something that the regulators need to think about. I was wondering what your updated view is on that, because it seems to me that you've taken a slightly more, a slightly harder view, assuming that there will be a charge. That's question number one. Number two, if for Friday afternoon you allow me to dream for a moment, the German P&C business has been a long-term work in progress, and it's really starting to deliver, or really not starting to deliver, it really is delivering. How much further do you think this can go? Because it doesn't, I get the sense that the momentum's only really started building. We're only a year or two into that momentum, in fact, in terms of delivery, yet it's already delivering great results and great growth. So what do you aspirationally think you can do in Germany?
I think let me start with Germany and the delivery of the P&C result. It is true they are outperforming the targets, and it is really a great success of the management team, which is at the moment also very happy with what they have achieved, and they should be really very proud about it. Our fairly, I would say, optimistic uplift of that we go to the upper end of the range in our outlook, I think is certainly based also on the fact that we trust very much into the German delivery. So now to lift the numbers for 2015 and giving new public targets, I think the half-year results might not be exactly the right place to do this, and therefore we should do this when it is the appropriate time. Andy, on this level playing field topic, I think that is really close to my heart, and I have really to look at the sovereign risk charge here in two ways. On one hand, I have to put into our model what we are in the end are being forced to include. If our regulator tells us without the sovereign risk charge your model has no chance for approval, then it would be hard to fight it. On the other hand, I will not stop saying that the level playing field among the insurance industry and also between insurers and bankers is a must. And if regulators are currently falling short of it or potentially are falling short of it, then we will certainly continue to highlight it at every opportunity.
I'm a bit disappointed with your German answer. I might ask it again, just maybe you might change your answer.
I enjoy the 91 combined ratio of the first half and take it as booked and granted.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to Vinit Malhotra of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
No, hi, good afternoon. This is Nick of Frank. Yeah, just one very quick follow-up. You know, we talk so much about the US EIA product. just also noticed that there's a 50 bips compression in margin between 1Q and 2Q. Is it just because of the falling, slight fall in U.S. Treasury yields in the quarter, or is there some caution being built because of this explosive growth in the product? So that's the first question. Second question, in PIMCO, we've seen already some calming out in the total return fund outflows in July, but equally the emerging market bonds and the high yield bonds are not doing too well. Could you just comment on is July and is it really getting a little better? If you could just add on that. And lastly, just a very quick one, is there any, are you already noticing or taking or discussing about the rule changes in India? Because if the FDI rules and the market value rules are there, then it could be a reasonably sizable decision to make. So just wanted to follow up. Thank you.
In India, I think we have, that when the rules are really changing, then we have all options to take up also our higher share in the business. But I think that is also negotiation with our joint venture partner. I think we would prefer actually also here to negotiate first with our joint venture partner. And then when the negotiation is completed, then we would announce it. But certainly we would be very positive when the rules are changing. So let's cross fingers that this is really happening. July changes in the financial market, I don't see too many impact on our results. I wouldn't see any special write-downs at the moment, so therefore I couldn't see what you are seeing at the moment. The new business margin in the U.S. actually includes two effects. You are right, it is 30 base points lower than in Q1. What we are doing in the U.S. also in the calculation of the new business margin, we are updating the interest rate curve every 2 weeks. So therefore, our Q2 number is at the end of Q2 already up to date with the latest interest rate, so therefore you get more or less the impact of the average interest rate of the quarter, and that was in the second quarter substantially lower than in the first quarter. And I think the impact of the interest rate change is probably more than the 30 base points, because the high sales volume was a positive, so therefore the interest rate impact is probably your 50 base points as you have mentioned. And then 30 is then the baseline impact, where 20 is being reversed by the volume. So good point, yeah.
Thank you. I just mentioned because the FIA say margin was 4.3 became 3.8, so just the FIA. But that's fine. Thank you very much for clarification.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now go to Michael Huttner of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Oh, I'm lucky. Thank you. On the pricing, so I just checked. So the pricing going forward, you know, that lovely table in the appendix, is up, and it is up 1.1%, I think, and it was up 1.4% at the half year, at the first quarter. Are we, from your comments, I'm taking we're actually now equal to the run rate of claims inflation. Is that about right? And then just to follow up on the three countries which are undergoing a turnaround, could we already see a material change in the third quarter? In other words, this 100 million reserving or 200 million total underwriting loss, could it maybe halve in the current quarter? Thank you.
I think that of the three countries, certainly Brazil, I think we will see an improvement month over month. Russia, I think we have probably taken the major part of the full year loss. maybe not yet all of it. That depends on how the day-to-day development is, but certainly more than 50% there for the second half of the year is certainly different. And Fireman's Fund, of course, depends pretty much on how the wind blows in the third quarter. Therefore, I cannot say that the second quarter result is different from the first half year result.
I understand.
And the pricing, look, I think inflation is in Europe at the moment not a topic. When the ECB is even recommending that all German employers should double the salaries of their employees to get more inflation into the country, you see where inflation stands in Europe. I personally think that is a desperate move of our central bankers when they are already coming with such proposals.
I'll take capital increase, but thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from Michael Haid of MainFirst Bank.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Two questions. First, on German life insurance, could you provide some more color on the breakdown of the new business margin of the traditional life product and of the new product Perspektive and Index Select? Second question, price effects in P&C insurance. I would like to reconcile two slides, the slide 9, negative price impact of minus 0.4%, and slide 62, where you show a positive price impact of 1.1%. How is the delta explained?
I think 62 is the strict price effect on renewals. And not on the total. I think there is price effects are probably not exactly calculated to the last decimal point, so there is some rounding differences between between the traditional business and Perspektive. The new business margin on Perspektive might be a little bit lower, but not a lot. I think the new business margin is not completely measuring the lower capital requirement the product needs, because new business margin calculation are not aligned with Solvency II thinking completely. And therefore the new business margin gives you only half of the story, and in particular in times when investment portfolios are shifting clearly to credit risk, I think the new business margin is a little bit falling short as a measurement in this respect, and I think we need under the Solvency II world more comprehensive measurements in the long run than new business margin.
And if you had the choice of selling still a traditional life product, and I know that Allianz Leben is very cost efficient, let's put it this way, and sell one Perspektive product, you would still go for the traditional product?
No, I think
as a company
we encourage for both sides, for the customer and us, the non-traditional product. Because the capital consumed by the non-traditional product is substantially lower, which allows us to take more investment risk. So therefore, it is a great trade for both sides. In the end, we are paying the customer for the Perspektive 30 base points more return. So we are paying at the moment 4.5% total return to a Perspektive customer, to a traditional customer 4.2%, and the 30 base points are justified because we are taking more investment risk. And to sell products in this low yield environment with 60 years guarantee, that is bad for the company and bad for the customer. For it is a win-win situation, and I think the people who are still skeptical about the win-win situation should spend more time with our product designers in Stuttgart.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal.
Well, it's Friday afternoon. The weekend is closed.
Yeah, and some have already packed their suitcases and off to the airport, as I heard the shuffling in the background. So I wish you really a great summer vacation for the one of you who were not yet off. August is usually vacation time, and Bavaria is here close to Italy. We all take August off as the school kids in Bavaria as well. And I wish you a great summer, and hope to speak to you soon after the summer. And I know what I have to deliver in the second half of the year. That is another good quarter in November, and then a good story on the capital management. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We say goodbye to everybody. Wish you a nice weekend, and talk to you soon. Bye.